Okay, welcome everyone to the 22nd lecture in our 24 lecture series on the Yisroel Kolim of the Gaur. I'm delivering this shiur, this lecture, from an undisclosed place in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. We are 2 days after Pesach. Those of you in Chutz La'aretz, it is Yisroel Chag, and I want to wish everybody a guten Sommer, a healthy and happy summer. And let us now, we're going to actually go to the very final part of the Asoa Klolim of the Goyim. We are now on Daf Kuf Mem Ches in the Asoa Klolim, line 410. Okay, so the words Daf Kuf Mem Ches, page 148, even though the Arabic numerals are absent from this, the text. And on line 410. Okay. The Goy now is going to introduce two Pautzufim, which he has not spoken about. And this is what he's going to call Inyan Abba Ve'ima. The concept of what's called Abba Ve'ima. Before we come to the Goy, let's try to understand really the system of Pautzufim according to the Arizal, how they're arranged, what the hierarchy is, and then we'll go with a little bit of elaboration of what the relationships of one Pautzuf is to the other. We all know that one of the important revolutions which was brought about by the Arizal was to bring about a metaphysical symbolic system of Pautzufim from Sfiras. We've spoken about this before. The Sfiras are more or less, you would call it points, which have literally no dimensionality in and of themselves. They refer to different aspects of God. The Pautzufim are when the Sfiras take upon an anthropomorphic human image. That's going from a Sfira to Pautzuf. Before the Ari, there's no notion of Pautzufim, certainly in the Kubbalim HaRishayim before him, even though the Zaya, in accordance with the interpretation of the Ari, speaks about Pautzufim literally everywhere. But the Ari was the first person, at least, after the time of the Rishayim, to interpret and to elaborate the terminology of Zaya in terms of the terminology and the symbol of Pautzufim. Now, but there is a certain type of a correspondence between Sfiras and Pautzufim in the following way. The Sfiras, of course, range from Keser. Keser basically gets divided up into two Pautzufim. The highest Pautzuf is Atik, and the lower Pautzuf, there was the upper half of Keser, is called Atik, and the lower part of Keser is called Arich. We've seen Atik already in the Goy. In fact, actually, in the Goy's discussion of Tzimtzum at the very, very beginning of these Klolim, the Goy actually refers about first to the fact that the first Tzimtzum is called Atik. I'm referring to the Klal Aleph, line 17. Zeh Tzimtzum Arishon Nikra B'Shem Atik. Atik is somehow the highest Pautzuf. And after that comes the Pautzuf of Arich. I will not go into detail the difference between Atik and Arich. Just important to know that Atik is the upper half of Keser, and Arich is the lower half of Keser. Now, after Keser comes Chochmah and Bina. Chochmah, from the sphere of Chochmah, we get the Pautzuf of what's called Abba. Right? Chochmah becomes Abba. And from Bina, we get the Pautzuf of Ima. From Bina, we get the Pautzuf of Ima. So Chochma and Bina refer to Abba and Ima. Now, we're not going to speak about Das. Das does not get a second Pautzuf in and of itself. After that, we have what's called the Vav Ketzavos, the six spheres of Chagat Nahi, Chesed Gevura Teferes, Netzach Hoyt Yisoyt. These six spheres constitute the Pautzuf of Zer Anpin, which I've spoken about. Zer Anpin, actually, if we actually translate the Aramaic, Zer Anpin means the short face, Anpin means face, Zer means small. Erech Ab means a longer space. So Erech Apayim refers to God, God as God's mercy, His ability to hold back from punishing His creations. That's Erech Apayim in Lashon HaKodesh, as it appears in the Chumash. And in terms of the Zayah and the Ari, it's called Arich Anpin. Zeh Anpin, right, refers more to what's called Midas Hadin, and therefore it's called the short face. Okay? Now, the final sphere, which is Malchus, is actually Nukva, refers to Nukva. I don't know whether we've spoken about Nukva. We actually spoke about Malchus and Nukva already, too. So we have like this. Therefore, the Patsufim are, in fact, Atik and Arich. Those are the higher, highest Patsufim, which form, respectively, the upper half and the lower half of Keser. And then the next Patsufim are Abba V'ima. Abba corresponds to the Sphira of Chachma, Ima corresponds to the Sphira of Bina. And then, of course, we have the Shesh Ketzavos, which we already spoke about it, and that refers to Zer Anpin, and then referred to Malchus. Now, it's important to note that the notion of Pautzuf is not only a notion of a face. A Pautzuf is actually an entire anthropomorphic form of a person. So a Pautzuf, in addition to having a face, even though Pautzuf literally means face, a Pautzuf also has arms, he has a chest, he has a torso, he has feet. And in fact, what the Ari introduced, when he introduced the concept of Pautzufim, he also introduced the concept of what's called hislapshut. In other words, the lower Pautzufim act as like clothes in robe, the higher Pautzufim, with the heads, more or less, I'm speaking very generally, the heads of the higher Pautzufim stick out, but the lower parts of the higher Pautzufim are actually enrobed or covered by the lower Patsufim. So for example, you take the Patsuf, let's call of Arich, right? Arich, so its upper part, the head of Arich, which is, because every Patsuf, of course, is also divided up into 10 spheres. So therefore, the higher part of Arich, which is the head of Arich, which is the Chochmah Bina V'Das of Arich, or Kesa Chochmah Bina of Arich, either way, then in fact, but the rest of Arich, in fact, actually, is covered by the Patsufim. So, for example, according to most Shmuas in the Eitz Chaim, the right arm of Arich is enrobed, right, within Abba, and the left part of Arich is enrobed within Ima, and then below that, you actually have other Patsufim, we saw Sabatvu, which I will go into, and then the lower part of Arich, from the navel to the bottom, actually is enrobed, is mislabesh, encloses itself within the parts of Hosea Anpin. Okay? And I don't go into detail, like I said before, but we have to understand that since Pautzufim introduced dimensionality to actually at least two dimensions, actually three dimensions, because actually this enrobement actually is actually in three dimensions around. So therefore, because of this, the relationship of the Patsufim, it's not like spheres where you have points and you have a hierarchy of points, but rather it's a two, three-dimensional relationship of layers, that the lower Patsufim are actually the outermost layers, and those are the lower Patsufim, and the higher Patsufim are the innermost layers, and of course the top of the higher Patsufim always protrude above the lower Patsufim. Okay, so that's basically the system of the Ari. Now, what's interesting is that there are two fundamental parts of the Zohar which form the basis of much of what the Ari speaks about, and those are actually called the Idras. Idra literally means in Aramaic, the hall. Those of you who will have noticed that when you come close to the Kaisel, before the Kaisel, there's a large plaza, and there's a building there, and that building there is called the Idra, right? The Idra is actually Aramaic for hall, and there in the Zaya there are two Idras, In other words, there are two sections of the Zohar. Each is called the Idra. What is called the Idra Rabba, and what's called the Idra Zuta, literally meaning the great hall and the small hall. Now, according to the Zohar, the Idra Zuta, actually, in fact, was taught by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai on the day of his death. In fact, one of the reasons that we make a Hilula, a Lag BaOmer, since this is after Pesach, and in Har Noth they're already starting to gather wood for the bonfires, then in fact we have to speak a little bit about Lag BaOmer. The Hilula of Lag BaOmer, which is the day which commemorates the Yahrzeit, the death of Shimon Bar Yochai. By the way, the fact that Shimon Bar Yochai is rumored to have died on Lag BaOmer, there is no source of Makor in the Arizal whatsoever. It's not mentioned at all in the Rashash, but we're just going now according to popular opinion. The Lag BaOmer is the Yahrzeit of the Shimon Bar Yochai. But it is true that on the day that Shimon Bar Yochai died, he taught, he was Megala, he revealed the Patsufim of Abba the Ima, namely as such. In the Idda Rabba, Abba the Ima are not explicitly revealed. They're not explicitly stated in the Idda Rabba. They only appear, they only are explicitly stated or referred to in the Idra Zuta, which was taught on the day of Shimon Bar Yochai's death. And the reason, says the Ari, for this, is that in fact the Abba Ve'ima are really underneath the beard, right, of Arich. Arich actually has what's called a dikna, a beard. I'm actually teaching you too much Kabbalah right now. I'll just stop over here. And somehow Abba Ve'ima are hidden within a part of Arich. And these Patsufim, well, that's what I speak about, according to most Shmuas. And then when these Patsufim are revealed, right, they're revealed as the two arms of Arich, that's later in the Idra Zuta. So in other words, there's a Gilui of Abba Ve'ima, which actually takes place in the Idra Zuta, not Idra Rabba. Now, what is the significance of this Gilui of Abba Ve'ima? Very, very interesting is that there's an interesting Gemara in Lama Gimel Beis that speaks about the chain of events in Shimon Bar Yochai's life when he first, in Shabbos, Lama Gimel Beis, and then Shimon Bar Yochai first goes into a mire in a cave, and he comes out, but he looks at a person plowing, and he can't believe that any person, after Shimon Bar Yochai himself has learned 12 years of the secrets of the Zohar in the cave, can engage himself in mundane agricultural activity. As he looks at him, the person is basically incinerated by the incredible look of Shimon Bar Yochai. A voice comes out from heaven and tells him to go back into the cave. And he goes out from the cave again. And this time, even though he looks at people, somehow there's a balance between him and his son, Rab Abba, I think. Rabbi Eliezer. There's a balance between him and his son. And they're able somehow to make the way through the world. This balance of chesed and din, in my opinion, refers to the giloi of Abba Ve'ima. Namely, as such, what is the meaning of the Agarata? The patsufim of Atich and Arich are patsufim of unity, of yichud. Because the patsufim of Atich and Arich do not have a separate nukva, a separate female counterpart. Rather, the nuk of Atich is part of Atich, the nuk of Arich is part of Arich. Now, the lower patsufim, Ze'an Pin and Nuk, of course, I mean, those are absolutely two patsufim. One is Ze'an Pin, which is the male counterpart, and one is Nukfa, which is the female counterpart. Now, the question is, we have the worlds of absolute unity, Atik and Arich. In fact, the Ramchal calls this Hanhagas HaYichud. Hanhagas HaYichud is when the world is being governed by the patsufim of Atik and Arich. The Hanhagas HaMishpat, says the Ramchal, it refers to the hanhag of the world through the Midas Hadin, which is basically through Zer Anpin and Nuk. Okay? Zer Anpin being the Midas of Chesed Din Gevurah Venetzach Yosoid, and Nuk referring to the actual physical world. However, what is the way in which we can bridge the gap between the Hanhagas HaYichud and the Hanhagas HaMishpat, or put it this way, putting it a better way, between the Eilemas HaYichud and the Eilemas the olamas of total yichud of unity, and the olamas which are of pirud, namely that, in other words, the olamas of yichud understand everything as being absorbed into a total one. The oilemis of Zer Anpi, the lower Patsufim, understand that the world is being governed by a multiplicity of midas depending upon man's actions. What is the bridge between these two conceptions, these two ontologies? The answer is Abba Ve'ima. On one hand, Abba Ve'ima are the first Patsufim to have a separate nukfa. The nukfa of Abba, of course, is Ima. On the other hand, the Zoya said, Kechada Nafkin Mechada Shaoyin. In other words, there's a unity in Abba Ve'ima which is constant. The unity between Ze'anpin and Nukvah only takes place when people do mitzvahs or there are certain tikkunim that take place in accordance with the metaphysical flow of history. However, Abba Ve'ima, on one hand, right, are similar to their lower counterparts, the Patsufim, is that there's a separate female and male counterpart, it's the Abba and Ima. On the other hand, the similar to the Eilas HaYichud is that basically the Zivug, the Abba Ima are always together. They're always united. They never separate. And Zer Anpin and Nuk, as we know, there's an Asira that the Nuk is peeled away from the Zohar as the Torah relates to us in the second parsha of the Chumash. Vayivra Satzela, then she's brought to Adar Harishon. This is a the Torah here is referring, at least the Mekubalim interpret, the Torah here is referring to the disassociation of Nukva from Zer Anpin and then their eventual reunification. Av V'ima are always unified. Of course, I'm speaking very, very simply. No one should take what I say, you know, in any Kabbalistic seriousness. But in any case, this is the basic idea. So in other words, Abba Ve'ima represents, in a certain sense, the bridge between the Paltzufim, the worlds of absolute unity, and between the worlds of clear multiplicity, where in fact the world is being governed either by, there's a distinction, a dichotomy between Tov V'ra, between Chesed and Din, etc., etc. That's the role of Abba Ve'ima in the Arizal. And that's why, for example, I mean, that is actually the in my opinion, in your humble servant's opinion, that's the interpretation, the meaning of the Gemara in Shabbos, that, of course, when Shimon Yochai came out of the cave, he couldn't relate to the physical world, right? Shimon Yochai, having been inundated in pure Torah study, having stripped himself almost of his physicality, as the Gemara speaks about, he was in sand for 12 years, he couldn't relate to the mundane world, he had to go back into the cave, and only after that, through the revelation of Abba Ve'ima, then there was actually a connection between worlds of unity and worlds of multiplicity. Of course, this is not necessarily the day that he died, but there was the Ganatur's Bin Merames is alluding to this important Kabbalistic fact. Okay, up till now, we've discussed the role of Abba Ve'ima in the Arizal. The question is, what is the Goyim going to do with Abba Ve'ima? As we've seen, there are many surprises in the Goyim. The Goyim has taken a lot of the Kabbalah of Yari and has actually creatively used a certain amount of poetic interpretation and creatively used these concepts in trying to achieve his own Kabbalistic conception of the ontology of the world. How is the Goyim going to use Abba Ve'ima? Okay, so with this we're going to begin with line 410, and I'm going to read, and we're going to go through word by word, and we're going to see in this, which is in fact the final section. I mean, the Klolim ends on line 470, and this is the final section where the Goyim is going to speak about Abba Ve'ima. If this work is as uniform as we expect it to be, we would expect actually that Abba Ve'ima is in fact going to be the somehow climax of these klolim, which means, in a certain sense, it's always very easy to speak about worlds of unity. It's very easy to speak about worlds of multiplicity. The transition from unity to multiplicity, of course, in a certain sense, is philosophically and ontologically the most difficult problem for any metaphysics to deal with, and this is actually what the Goyim actually is going to deal with in this final section. Inyan Abba Ve'ima. Okay? Once again, what is the Inyan? What is the concept of Abba Ve'ima? Allah Gro. Kvar Bialti. The Goyim says, I've already explained. Shiritzon Yizboach HaTov. that God's goodwill, His will of goodness, niknas, is hidden away. For Allah l'mayla me'asakas abu'en, it was hidden from the bu'en. We've spoken about this many times. This is called histalkos. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, after the initial act of creation, disengages himself from the world. This is the ohamakim, which leaves the kli. We've seen several expressions of this theme throughout the Klal of the Goyim. And then it's beyond the hasaga, beyond the conceptual radar of the creations. In this way, all the worlds were, in fact, created. That, in fact, actually, the Rishima, God's impression, was left within the kli, but the Taiva Nignaz, right, the hidden away goodness, leaves the kli, and that disengages itself from the world. And that really was, in a certain sense, a definition of the first Tzimtzum. Now we spoke about that after this was called histalkos and hispashtus, namely that in fact there's a disengagement of the divine from that which is less than divine, but then after that there's an illumination, which the Goyim calls hispashtus. Right? We have the we have a symphony, which actually a symphony or poem, which occurs in a two-step alliteration, namely histalkos, disengagement, and hispashtus, say, illumination, right? Baba derech iglun v'yeshu b'klosu pratas. Now we spoke about the hispashtus, which means is that the principle which connects the histalkos, right, with the world that remains, the rishima which remains, we spoke about that there's actually two concepts, which is called Igulim V'yosha. The Goyim spoke about this in quite a bit of detail in Klal Zayin, on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin. He says that Hashkacha comes in two Bechinas, which is called Igulim V'yosha, which are called Hashkacha Klolish Hashkacha Pratis. I'm referring here to line 215 and 216 on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin. So we have Klal Uprat, right? And that is basically the basic movement. The Histalkos, right? And then Hispashtus. And Hispashtus is actually composed of two movements, which is Igul V'yosha, Klal Uprat, Klal Uprat, the general and the particular. And says the Goyim, of course, this is B'derech Igulin B'Klal Supratus. Now, the Goyim says that this process of Igulim V'yosha, which means Klal Uprat, which is the basic mechanism, right, of which expresses the structure of the world, this actually permeates and expresses itself within the natural world, and as we're going to say throughout with man too. V'hainu, says the Goyim, what does this mean? We're now on line 413. Hashemayim mekabel ba'or b'klolos. The Shemayim, I guess the heavenly host, receives the light of God, light. Actually, it's not even speaking about spiritual light. Receives light b'klolos. Receives light in a general fashion. Umei la'oretz. And illuminates the earth, right? So through this light, then everything, you know, grows and comes out in the world in detail. So for example, I guess the sun receives the light, beklolos, right? And because of this, it goes through the atmosphere, and because of that, everything receives the light, beklolos, in detail. So therefore, says the Goyim, this concept of klolos and pratos is really the notion of Abba V'ima. It's a notion of Abba V'ima. Says they go on line 415, V'nikra Shemayim tamid b'shem Av. Shemayim is always called Av. Like it says, ki'inyan, like it's like we say, Avinu Shema Shemayim. In other words, Shemayim doesn't only mean our Father in heaven, it means the heaven which is Father, which is Abba. Kishamu rotzim baba klolos b'chidas Av. Because the Ratzon comes in a general, which means in a unified manner, which is called Av. And there it goes to the world, which is and the Bechina of Ein, which has the aspect of Ein. And Ein, of course, is Portus, is detail. Visham Nishtar, you make Klita. Now things grow by, first of all, that the seeds are absorbed to the ground. It's called Klita. Or the seed actually is enclosed, is cloned in the egg, and that's called Klita. After that, there's the period of Ebor, which is when during the period of pregnancy, the fetus, Vahaleta, and birth, Achaka. In other words, basically, there's what's called Klolos, right, which receives the light in a unified fashion, and the light itself is not really, in a certain sense, composed of disparate parts, but rather it's a unity unto itself. But then when the light illuminates the world, and it causes things to grow, and it causes all the energy mechanisms of the world to produce life and all the forces of nature, this happens in much more detail. That's called Protos. And that's called Aim. I guess like Mother Earth, it's called Aim. Mitzmir called Dova Vadova, but Protos, this makes everything grow, but Protos, the blades of grass, of course, are the symbol of what's called detail. Protos. Commotion is Taya, Bahatipa, Abamina Av, Uabinyan Av, Lachola Davaho. That's how the Tipa that comes from the Father, it has this intrinsic structure and potential for detail, and it's called a binyan av. In other words, the av represents the binyan. A binyan av represents the first foundation from which the details will in fact actually emerge from it. Sha'av hu meloshen v'loy ova, shu pelesh rotzai. Now ava is from loshen of rotzai, right? Desire. V'nikra b'zaya ha'kodosh. It's called the desire of everything, the overall desire. Shekulam is avim v'chafotzim lezeh shuatoy v'amiti. Because all of, in fact, what is it called, the desire, the universal desire? Abba is called ta'ufsa dekula, desire of everything. Because everything in the world has this, everything in the world has the desire for this goodness. In other words, not only is there a goodness from the standpoint of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's a desire of goodness from the standpoint of the entire creation. And of course, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, as his mashkiach upon the world, as his providence regulates the world, right at the bottom of this, the ultimate ulterior motive and factor is Kadosh Baruch Hu's rotzayim. His will to do good. We see that the Gemara and Tainis, the Chazal, they praise the notion of Geshamim. Why is it called Geshamim? Why are Geshamim considered to be the important praise of the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Says the guy in line 424, because Geshamim is the beginning where God's hidden and unitary and holistic Ratzoy, right, becomes expressed in a much more concrete and detailed fashion. That's called Geshem. Lahakshim means to take something which has no shape or no form and to give it form. V'derach zeh b'chol oylam v'oylam. Now, says the Gaon a very interesting thing, that this takes place in every world. Now, what's interesting is the Gaon is actually coming now to develop a theme which he has alluded to in the previous klolam, but in fact, actually, we never got to speak about it in detail. We remember that the very, very end of Klal Aleph, for example, the Gaon mentions from line 20 to line 23-24, that there's not only one symptom, there's several symptoms. The Gaon says, for example, that there's the first symptom, which is called Atik. And then he says in line 22, Umach Mashiach's old Kama Tzimtzum, and there are other Tzimtzumim, Achazah, HaTzimtzum HaRishon. So the first symptom is called Atik Datikin. But the Gaon mentions the fact that there are other Tzimtzumim. And in fact, actually, we saw actually in the Bihagor, in the south of the Sneilsa, that the Gaon spoke about, that actually that every single world is a Tzimtzum. In other words, Tzimtzum is actually a concept which applies from one world to another world. So, in fact, actually, what the Gaon is saying is an incredible thing. The first Tzimtzum is called Atik. And, of course, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the Gaon spoke about the notion of Chachma and Tvuna. Chokhmah is the concept of existence, God's notion, right? His conception of the purpose of his creation. And Tevuna, as the Gaon said in Klal Gimel and Klal Dalet, was the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu would realize his will, his purpose of creation, in, by creating the world in a certain way. So the Gaon there spoke about Chokhmah and Tevuna, right? And the Gaon invoked the Pasuk, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, the Chokhmah v'Tevuna v'Das. The fact is that the Gaon in these Klalim, Klal Gimel and Dalet, was speaking about the very, very first Tzimtzum. What are the other Tzimtzumim called? It seems that the Gaon understands that every Tzimtzum, right, is in fact actually a passage from something which is analogous of Chokhmah to Tevuna, which is actually the Patzufim Patzufim from Abba to Ima. In other words, Abba is that which receives the Rotzon HaKlali, and Ima is able to take the Rotzon HaKlali of Abba and express it in detail, which is the Rotzon HaPrati. So basically, when the Gaon concludes his Klolim with the concept of Abba v'Ima, what the Gaon is doing is showing us that the creative act of God, let's actually change our language and make it a little bit more sophisticated, the creative act of God is something which is actually repeated and used and imitated in every aspect of the natural and human world. Every aspect of the physical world involves harnessing a certain dova klali, a certain general thing, and developing it and putting it to use in the world, right, in detail, in the words, in specific shapes and forms and details. This act of creation is merely a description of the initial creative act of Tzimtzum, which is basically mimicked in every hierarchy of the natural and human and anthropomorphic world. So the Gaon had, for example, now used the example of the sun, as it's able to harness the unitary and overall and non-variegated light and energy, and to illuminate the world in accordance with the specific details of the lower terrestrial world, which of course use light in very specific and limited fashion. But goes on the Gaon and says this actually refers to the psychological and the emotional makeup of a person too. Says the Gaon at the very last two lines of Daf Kuf Mem Ches. Now the Gaon actually turns to man. So it is too with the ways of God, meaning the ways in which man relates to God. Abba v'yira, a man's relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, right, is always described either through Abba or through Yira. Says the Gaon, Heim Abba v'ima. Abba v'yira, which are the two basic emotions with which man connects with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. This, in fact, actually is also another manifestation of the concept of Abba v'Ima. Now, how is this true? Ki Abba hu b'derech klolos. Abba is something which is general. It's not related, it's not, you know, directed in any detail. Sh'atoiv enu toiv rakim u'kulei toiv b'li ha'ed ha'klal. In other words, it refers to a general goodness, because ultimate goodness, right, says the Gaon, of course, cannot be missing anything. So Abba represents a total goodness which has and which does not have any type of anything which is missing. And now I'm on Daf Kuf Mem Tes on line 428. Therefore, the gematria of Ava is Echad. Ava is a unitary thing. It cannot be broken down into constituent parts. It's a total unity. And by virtue of this overall unitary love, a person is moved and motivated to do the rat, to do the will of his creator. Whether because of this pure love or this desire to achieve God's ultimate goodness. Okay, in other words, whatever a person's desires are, where it's a love of God's goodness, or to acquire God's true goodness, or to fulfill the will of his creator without any intention or ulterior motive to achieve God's goodness. This directs a person, right, to do God's will with Ava and Yira. Now, why do we need Yira? If a person is full of Ava, why do you need Yira? Now we come to the Lithuanian part. Up till now, we're speaking about Ava. You might, Chas v'Shalom, confuse the God with the Chazan. Chas v'Shalom, that cannot be. But says the guy, Ava is of no function, of no use without Yira. Just like Ava is of no function in its unitary wholeness without the expression that can be used in details via Ima. When a person is careful, the details of the halacha, or the details of not doing the averas, that can only come from Yira. That comes from Ava, comes from Yira. There's different levels of Yira, like Ava, in every type of level, in accordance with, you know, with that level, that particular level. Because the Taiva Tzol Tzadikim, the goodness that's promised Tzadikim, only comes by doing the mitzvah, not just by loving, stop loving God. The person do mitzvahs. That's Judaism. It's not Christianity, it's Judaism. But if a person is worried, is not doing the mitzvah properly, therefore his char, his reward, will in fact be diminished. So a person makes sure that his mitzvah will be done properly, in accordance with all of its details. The details come from this year, which is called Iba. So in other words, Ava is an important thing in initially leading a person to do the Ratzon, the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It motivates a person. But the bottom line is that a person will not do the mitzvahs properly without Yira. Because Yira is Ima, which produces, or which gives scrutiny and gives care to the Tiktuki HaMitzvahs, without which a person will never achieve Olam Haba. So the Goyim is saying in a certain sense that the relationship of Ava to Yira is the relationship of Abba to Ima. Abba is unitary, whole, undivided, but it's not useful in the physical world. And only by doing the mitzvahs does a person get to Olam Haba. He doesn't get Olam Haba by being enthralled with his love of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's Christianity, it's not Judaism. And thereby, this requires, this detailed circumspection and scrutiny in doing the mitzvahs can only come from Yira, which is Ima. So what the Goyim is saying is that the psychological structure which leads a person to do God's will in accordance with the demands of the Torah also come to the process of Ava ve'Ima, here being expressed through Ava and Yira. Goes on the Goyim and says in line 439, V'chein Teresh v'chsav u'bechinas Abba. Teresh v'chsav is called Abba. That represents Torah Shemachsav, the written law. The written law represents the Ratzon of a Kodesh Baruch in a general way, in a unitary way. But the details of the mitzvahs is called Torah Shemachsav, which means that Torah Shemachsav is Abba. Pirtei HaMitzvahs is called Torah Shemachsav, that's called Ima. So therefore, we also have the Lashon of the Sifra, right? Kololum u'pratim. Right? Al titosh Torah simecha. In fact, actually, the Torah should be chsav as Abba. But the Torah should be al peh. Right? The details of the mitzvahs, that's called Ima. V'chein b'sechel ha'adam. And similarly with the intellect of man. Ki chok bas ha'adam sh'nishtaya bo hu b'chines ha'rishima sh'nishtaya ach ha'asiluk. B'mar sh'nizgal v'chines b'eish yitzirosu y'chok ha'matipesh. When a person, b'lamdin lo'ikol ha'tir kolo v'shechayach. When a person is taught all the Torah when he's in a fetus, right? As we've spoken about previously, this is the Bechina of Abba. The whole Torah is taught in a general fashion, right? In a Kol Yitzchak fashion, in a unitary, united fashion. That's called Abba. That, of course, disengages itself. That leads to Rishimoy. And a little bit is left so that the person doesn't actually have to recreate the wisdom of the Torah ex nihilo yesh bi'ayin. A little bit is left for the person to use it, to make use of it during his life. This is a little bit of, or the yinuk, like the chachma, a little bit of chachma that a child has. A child needs a certain type of basic chachma of wisdom in order to be able to develop later on in his life. Of course, this chachma matures. The wisdom matures. As a person matures, because this chachma is a chitzonius, which means what? It's a lower patsuf, which means it's like ima, right? Which comes to express the ultimate chachma with which a person was inundated, and then when he was a fetus, and that's of course Abba. So basically, the tinoik, the person, the human being, learns to take this kloliistic, what's left of this kloliistic chachma, this unitary chachma, and to express it in detail, to break it down. That's called bina, that's called ima. So basically, a person's intellect, throughout his life, acts as abba and ima. A person receives God's chachma in a general, unitary fashion. That's Abba. A little bit after it disengages itself from the person, a little bit is left. That, again, is the basic intuition that a person has, which he has to develop in his lifetime. And then when a person takes this and develops this intuition and makes it much more sophisticated, analyzes it, and matures intellectually, this is the process of Ima, going from Klal to Prat. Can a dava rule and a tzoyne ba, I'm going on to the page, kufnun, beklalois, bechadlin, spashim, al alev, a dava rule, al bil. You also do with the act of intellect too. A person first conceives of something in a general unitary way, and after that, right, says the God a very incredible thing. What the God says is that in the act of intellectualization, of intellectual apprehension, first, God's rutzon, God's will, right, somehow reaches a person or is conceived by a person or intuited by a person in a general way. And then it comes to the heart. I'm on Daf Kuf Nun, on line 450. It comes to the heart. Hahu al boya. Right, it comes clearly to the heart. Then a person becomes enamored with a thing. He desires a thing. In other words, the root of all thought is a desire, a love for the object of knowledge, or the knowledge itself. So the lev is called eifai. Why? So the Goyin says the lev is called eifai. Loshen ma'afel loshen b'cham. It heats things up. It bakes things. Because it gives boundaries, the ways. It basically creates the bounds and the parameters in order to, it allows a person to take this love of the object of knowledge and to get a handle on it. And this thing can either warm up his desire for something, or it can actually lessen desire for something. It's very interesting that the Goyin is actually using a lashon that man's relation to chachma is somehow an act of av, an act of love. This is interesting, is somehow reminiscent of the Rambam at the end of Perek Yud Hilchos Tshuva, the famous Rambam, that a person is supposed to pursue the knowledge of God, and the Rambam uses a mashal, like a person pursues a woman. Namely, there's an erotic aspect to intellectualization, but rather, true intellectual apprehension only comes through a love of knowledge. I guess philosophy is actually a love of knowledge. So, in fact, this love, the intuiting of this love, that which, you know, when the thing comes clearly to a person, it comes because of his love of something. And then when his love is directed to be used, that's called the Pratim. So we have Abba Ve'ima, Abba Eim. Ki achot ma shabor, aboyer is barchas hakol, hi berotzem achas kefir sha'ola berotzen aboyer. V'shinu mach b'tzir ha'mayis sha'ola b'tzir l'asish b'derech hazeh. So Kosh Baruch Hu, when he created everything, that was with one ratzon. I have a desire to do good for man. Ratzon aboyer, which is God's love. And of course, he created things in a certain way because that would be the most effective, the mechanism through which this creation would allow man to perceive it. So in other words, God's creation of the world comes from God's will, which is a love for his creation, do good for his creation. Hence, man, when man apprehends something intellectually, the same process happens. Man is drawn to somehow confront or intuit the general form of this chachma, right? And this creates a desire in man to do to know it more. And because of this, man will be led to take this chachma and to break it up and to give it parameters and form in order that it can be used in a detailed manner. And of course, this is called Bina. So in other words, Abba Ve'ima is in fact actually a love, an act of love. In other words, all of intellect apprehension is an expression of an act of love, where man takes is fueled by the love of the unitary whole, right, and brought about to try to understand it in a specific parameterized manner in order to use it, right, to be able to make full use of it in intellectually apprehending it and coming to a detailed understanding of its different parts. And basically, what is the Goyen saying in all these things? V'heben sh'yiv sh'lis b'tu azu rak b'yispash l'chob b'derech ha'bina, k'yishin y'chob b'tu b'ach b'z ha'bina, sh'heben ha'bruyim, k'yin tamen gam b'bnei adam, gam b'oilim, gam ha'tera, gam ha'shkocha, kol al derech zeh ha'heben. What's the Goyen saying in the last lines? The Goyen is saying that everything works the same. God works the same as nature, as works the same as man. In other words, up till now, we've spoken about man's role. By the way, man's role has not been minimized in these lectures, in these shiurim. But man's role was a role of interpretation. Man interpreted God's acts, God's word, and man created the means, right, which determine God's will. The Goyen is going actually a step further. The Goyen is saying that the creative mechanism with which God created the world is identical with the creative mechanism through which the world operates and the creative mechanism through which man feels and thinks. In other words, man is God. Man not only defines God's Russian intellectually, but the mechanism by which man apprehends things intellectually is the same mechanism by which God created the world. There's an initial unitary state which is fueled by ratzon, by love, and this translates itself in the ability to take this unitary state and to parametrize it in such a way that can be broken down in a way which is effective in furthering the goal of the general purpose. So in other words, man is God. Not only man interpret God's world for him, man's creativity, man's creative process is a divine creative process. Man mimics God, right? Not only in his ability to interpret and to create intellectually the guidelines, right, and the parameters which constitute God's law and God's signs too, but man's, the creative process of man is also divine in its very structure. And that's what the Goyen is saying. And this refers to the fact that the Tzimtzum, the initial Tzimtzum, is only the first of a cosmos, of a world, which whose basic fundamental particle is a binary fundamental particle of Tzimtzum Abba Ve'Iba. In other words, Abba Ve'Iba represents the Tzimtzum in particular in every single detail of the world. The initial creation is the Tzimtzum called Hatik, but really the Tzimtzum, which is the act of creation at every natural and human level, that's called Abba Ve'Ima, the passage from Chochmah to Bina. That's what they're going to say. Now, what has the Goyim done? What the Goyim has done is he's created a philosophy of Judaism where man stands very, very much at the center of the picture. The Torah, the ontology of the world as visioned by Judaism, is not something where man, in fact, is relegated to a perhaps distinguished but non-central role, but rather man stands at the center of the world. Man is the pivotal point, the centerpiece of the essence, right, of the divine creation and the divine purpose. The Goyim basically has created a type of a ellipse which has two centers. One is God, one is man. And both in a certain sense operate in a very, very analogous fashion. Man, in fact, not only does man create that interpretation which defines the divine will, but man's actually creative process is something which mimics the divine creation, which just like his creator is rooted in love and in desire to do good and to make use of that love in a very, very specific way. We've just about finished with the Goyim. We have four lines left, but we're just really beginning. The question is, where do we place the Goyim in the context of world history? I have on my desk here a very wonderful book by Ernst Cassirer, right, which is called An Essay on Man, An Introduction to a Philosophy of Human Culture. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this book, but it's a beautiful essay in which Ernst Cassirer, who was the important founder of called the Philosophy of Symbolic Forms, creates an entire philosophy of the history of man. Now, what I want to do, beginning Mirza Shem on next week, or next time we meet, I know time has become much more abstract since we're not live, is I want to read a section from Gitzira which will explicate the changing role that man has had in relation to the universe, in man's conception of himself throughout history, and show how the Goyim, where the Goyim fits in into this conception. We will admit, and therefore, because of this, we will devote the next two lectures in trying to understand the Goyim and his place in intellectual history, Emet Hashem, beginning with the next two lectures. Be well.